This program is intended for mature audiences only.
Welcome to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I'm your host, Chip August, and today on the show, we are talking about Zen, about Buddhism, we are talking about awareness, we are talking about meditation, we are talking to Sherry Huber, and Sherry Huber, I've been a big fan of Sherry Huber for years. Sherry Huber has been a student and a teacher of Zen for over 30 years. She's the author of 19 books, including There Is Nothing Wrong With You, The Depression Book. By the way, she's been acknowledged as the country's foremost expert on depression and spirituality, When You're Falling, Dive, and her most recent, Transform Your Life, A Year of Awareness Practice. Sherry founded the Palo Alto Zen Center and the Zen Monastery Peace Center in California. She conducts workshops and retreats at these centers and at venues around the U.S. and internationally. She has an internet-based weekly call-in radio show, Open Air. Sherry's a member of the Social Venture Network, a national organization that combines social responsibility, spirituality, and business. She is a founder and director of Living Compassion, a nonprofit organization dedicated to peace and service.
You simply sit and let your eyes go soft and sort of unfocused, and then you just notice. And that's the key to the entire thing. That is the fast track to freedom. You simply notice. You're not trying to clear your mind. You're not trying to see something. You're not trying to figure something out. You're just sitting there noticing everything that happens. The basic understanding that I'm coming from is that life is not separate. And contrary to what our senses tell us, if we think about it for just a split second, if we actually were separate from life for that split second, we would be dead. Because we are absolutely connected to everything else that is alive.
She's a terrific writer and a terrific speaker, and I'm really glad to have you on the show. Welcome to Sex, Love, and Intimacy, Sherry Huber.
Well, thank you, sir. That was great.
Yeah, you're pretty great. I have to say, your book, There Is Nothing Wrong With You, I see clients and I lead workshops in love, intimacy, and sexuality. My listeners know this. It's a book I actually give my clients to start. It's the place I always start. I hand them that book and say, you know, maybe the place we need to start is just our own experience of self-love or the lack thereof.
Yeah. Oh, that's very good. Thank you. Thank you for that.
I'm going to read a little passage just to give sort of my listeners a sense about what you sound like and what you say. And it's not particularly, 19 books, how do you pick one passage? So this is from a book you wrote called Be the Person You Want to Find, Relationship and Self-Discovery. And it just kind of gives you, the reader, a sense of your voice when you write. You wrote, "In the beginning, I fall in love and find that I've tapped into the very best within me. I am loving, generous, and understanding. Life is easy, bright, and joyful. I don't mind traffic, paying bills, my coworkers, household chores. I'm in love. Birds are singing, the sky is blue, the sun is shining, the flowers are blooming, children are laughing. Everything is perfect. A little time passes, and the stress of the heightened energy of being in love begins to take its toll. What was spontaneous and thrilling begins to feel a little chaotic. All the things I've let slide are starting to feel overwhelming. I miss my structure, my habits and schedule, my friends and family, my workout, having the Sunday paper to myself. Instead of being carefree and joyous, I'm irritable, edgy, bristly. Before this relationship, life was calmer and more predictable. I wasn't required to be available and generous all the time. I had time off to rest and recuperate, time for me, for my life, for who I am. Now, I find I've tapped into the very worst within me, and I'm not aware of exactly what's gone wrong. I can't find a balance. I lose my ability to communicate, and I go into my survival behaviors. I become bitter, angry, resentful, and punishing. Boy, if that just isn't the story of a million, billion, trillion love affairs.
Haven't we all been there?
Really? You just sort of nail it in 2 pages, you know?
That covers 2 pages because, as you know, and your listeners probably don't, it's written like a kid's book. So we cover a lot of territory therein.
My experience of your books is I can pick up any one of your books and open to any page, and there will be some nugget right in that page. You're terrific about this. So let's start by just talking about learning to love yourself. That's a great place to start, okay? Let's start with, where does it go? I mean, it seems to me we're born loving ourselves. Why don't we just hang on?
Yeah, of course, now Zen is my thing. So what we're actually born with is not being separate. So we are not standing outside of ourselves, judging ourselves through any sort of system. We're just more along the lines of puppies and kittens. We're alive. We are life. We express that. There's no problem. And then we go through this rather brutal process of socialization that enables us to sort of fit into society, but mostly causes us to feel separate from ourselves, puts us in that standing outside of ourselves and outside of life with this voice in our head that's constantly telling us what we're doing and how we're being and how we should be and what's wrong and what there's not enough of and how we should improve and that sort of thing. So, yes, we go from a place that we could call love because there's nothing there that isn't love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a love as compared to something else. It's just life,
right.
A little child fully alive in life. Through this process of separation to where now something is lovable or it isn't. It's okay or it's not. And that's the place, of course, that most conditioned adults find themselves in. And the message that we got most clearly through that process is, as we are definitely not lovable.
Yeah.
We're a self-improvement project going badly.
It's all those messages of you're not getting A's and stand up straight and eat your food and, you know, don't play with your food. And right, it's
that's
all
right.
Those,
you got picked last for the sport and then you hit adolescence and you weren't the popular kid and you weren't the, yeah. So what we focus on in Zen is not so much love for yourself as compassion and understanding, which leads to love.
Mm-hmm.
But there's that interim step of, first of all, being able to see oneself as we really are, not as we've been taught to believe we are. So we look at ourselves the way we would look at any other, you know, pretty nice, basically decent, somewhat flawed, regular old human being. And that critter is lovable.
How do you come to know that? Because I'm looking through these eyes that tell me I'm too fat and I'm too old and I'm too, I don't know, you know, pick a...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what we learn to do is see those eyes and that viewpoint for what it is.
Mm.
And, you know, there's a really quick, down and dirty way to do this. And that is that almost everybody has someone or something that they love unconditionally. For a lot of people, it's our children, but it can be, you know, a brother or a sister. It can be a dog or a cat.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't actually matter what the object is. It's, it's someone or something that we love unconditionally. So we look at whoever that is and then imagine trying to say to that person or creature what the voices in our head say to and about us.
Mm.
And there's no way we're going to look at our best friend and say, you might as well just hang it up because you're old and you're fat and nobody's ever going to find you attractive, and you're never going to have the relationship you want. So why don't you just forget it? In fact, you know, it would take a great deal of torture to make us even consider saying something like that to someone we love. So through that sort of process of self-awareness, we begin to have a sense that, wait a minute, there's something screwy happening inside this head. And, of course, as we pursue that line of awareness, we, you know, so I talk to my best friend and come to find out she or he has the same thing going on. And you look at that person and say, but you're wonderful. You're wonderful. Yeah, but this is what the voices are saying to me. So we close in on the realization that that voice that talks to us inside our head is not kind, it's not loving, and it's not right, and it's not particularly smart. So as we separate ourselves from that, and the, you know, cut to the chase, bottom line of Zen is we begin to realize that we are the awareness that is aware of all of this, rather than either that voice or the object, the victim of that voice.
So we cultivate the witness inside us, the one who is witnessing that we are actually treating ourselves this way.
Yes. Observer is not, if it slides into, yeah, but you are fat, mm-hmm. you haven't hit the witness or the observer yet.
Yeah, right.
So the one that we're talking about does not have those kinds of judgments.
Right.
Actually just simply sees what is. And in every case, what is someone who is inherently lovable. Now, we could go off on a, you know, what about Hitler? Which
it was my first thought.
Yeah.
Reading my mind.
Yeah, it's just such a colossal waste of time.
Yeah.
Because then we have to get into, are human beings inherently good or are they inherently evil? And this produces a whole big religious discussion. So we just limit it to our family and friends.
Oh, got it.
You know, the people that we're actually dealing with.
Right. Let's just skip the argument about the theoretical and stay in the
actual
practical life we're in.
Yeah, none of us will be having to make a decision about a relationship with Adolf Hitler.
Got it. If Eva Braun comes to you to do Zen, you'll deal with it.
But, then we have to look at it,
right.
Yeah. And so, you know, we're looking at just pretty regular people most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And those people, one of the expressions in Zen is we're all sort of the victims of saddened love.
Mm.
So we start out as these little kids who are very completely connected to life. We go through this awful, no, stop it, put that down, I'm going to slap you across, you know, until we learn to feel bad about ourselves and believe all kinds of terrible things about ourselves. We become defensive. We develop all these survival strategies. And by the time we get to be, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, whatever it is, we got a lot of stuff we're dragging around that we have to get through in order to be loving, and somebody else has to get through in order to love us.
Yeah, if we'll let them get through that. And I get that the trap in that, of course, is the person who sees us with loving eyes, we think doesn't really see us. You know, if they really knew, then they'd know we were awful.
Oh, exactly. The classic, I don't want to belong to a club that would have me as a member.
Right.
So, you know, if you like me, I can do better than you.
Right.
And that is such a, that is such a classic relationship kind of situation to be in. And we talk about it as self-hatred.
Mm.
That's all that's going on. You know, my self-hatred causes me to want to be in relationship with somebody who will treat me the way I believe I deserve to be treated.
Yeah.
So I want the captain of the football team because he's desirable. And, of course, if he doesn't want me, that proves what a superior person he is. And so he's all I want. But here's this nice guy who's just a regular nice guy. Well, I'm not interested in him because he's like me. Yeah, it's a very sad thing that has happened to us humans.
Yeah. We need to pause for a moment. I want to give a chance to support our sponsors and let them support us. You're listening to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I'm your host, Chip August. We're talking to Sherry Huber. Please stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about compassion and about love. And remember, at the end of the show, we'll have a little exercise that you can do to improve your own awareness. We'll be right back. Perfect. It was just a good spot to break. Okay. I'm going to, I love that. Saddened love. Is that what you called it? Yeah. I have another person I interviewed, Alison Armstrong, leads workshops for women to learn how to really celebrate men. And one of the things she talks about women being frog farmers, that we find these people that are princes, but our own self-esteem requires that we turn them into frogs, you know, that we have to bring them down to believe that they really would love us. And it's very compatible with what you just said. Okay, here we go. Welcome back to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I'm your host, Chip August. We're talking to Sherry Huber. Sherry, somewhere in the middle of all that, you said something about compassion, and I'm not sure everybody really knows what compassion is or what you mean by it. So can we talk a little bit about compassion?
Sure. We have to get a little kind of esoteric and spiritual about it. For me to communicate what I mean by it. The basic understanding that I'm coming from is that life is not separate. And contrary to what our senses tell us, if we think about it for just a split second, if we actually were separate from life for that split second, we would be dead.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are absolutely connected to everything else that is alive. An understanding of that and an experience of that is what leads to compassion. So much of our conditioning, that same conditioning that we were just talking about, is focused on differences. And that's what keeps us separate. Finally, I've looked at it long enough that I realize, wow, I'm different from everything on the planet. I am completely separate. And of course, we're not. That's an illusion. So as we get to know ourselves better and see what operates us and see that those voices of conditioning and how we got to the place we got to, we have a growing sympathy for ourselves that comes from that clarity and understanding. And we then begin to see the same thing in other people. So I can look at someone, you know, I've always maybe been standoffish because I don't really trust people because I think, you know, what you mentioned earlier, if they get to know me, they're not going to like me, and then that's going to hurt me. And so I do some looking inward, and I realize that that's going on. Then I start looking at other people, and I can sort of see signs of that in them as well. And so I have compassion for the person who is shy or the person who appears aloof or that sort of thing because I am experiencing our oneness.
As I see myself not just as this unique individual but also as a part of the whole and see sort of the commonality that we all experience, I develop self-love, and self-love automatically leads to love of others, kind of, I think, is what you're saying.
Yes, and again, my word is compassion, because to me, love is just so trashed. We need another word, because it's everything from the most grisly kinds of abuse to, you know, just Hallmark cards and sappy, you know, I was nothing until I found you, and now as long as, oh, but you're gone, and so my life is, you know, it's just got so much baggage attached to it. But compassion, that deep understanding of our shared, in this case, humanity, and the acceptance that comes with that, I think leads us to what I would like to see, once we came up with the word for it, a new understanding and expression of a connection that is from shared interest and respect and attraction and appreciation and, you know, all of those kinds of, you're a whole human being, I'm a whole human being, and we come together because we would like to be in relationship. not out of need or mm-hmm. lack or a hope of being fixed or made whole or that sort of thing.
Well, now, I get a little confused about all this because it seems like that desire, that attraction, isn't that sort of the path to suffering? Isn't that a kind of attachment? Isn't that sort of the opposite of what Zen and Buddhism is all about?
Well, that's what people think it's all about.
Well, that's why I asked the question.
Yeah, but it's not what I think it's about. What happened as those kinds of religions or spiritualities came over from the East is that people attached to certain aspects of it, and then that's sort of come down through. An awful lot of people get more attached to non-attachment and struggle more as a result of that. So, you know, I can go back to Ram Dass, if you probably mm-hmm. know Ram Dass. He said one of the greatest things in the world on this subject. He said, "I love you as much as I've ever loved anyone in my life, and it doesn't matter if I never see you again."
Mm.
So what we're talking about is an unconditional love that is not self-absorbed. And, of course, I think for most people that's the ideal. But what happens to us instead is that we turn more into what we were conditioned from. So, you know, we see parents locked in these relationships that they don't really understand, that have much more to do with fear and need and control than they do with anything that we would think of as an open-hearted, accepting, expansive love. You know, very little generosity, a lot of blame and that sort of thing. And so while we have these wonderful ideals of what love can be like, what we tend to bring to it from our own conditioned life experience is something that leads us to a great deal of unhappiness. So if we could use relationship, all of our relationships, as an opportunity to see what causes us to close down, causes us to become judgmental and isolated and controlling and all of those sorts of things, then it would be a spiritual awareness practice as well as something that would definitely improve all of our relationships.
So you actually see relationship as one path to improving or increasing self-awareness and awareness of, you know, improving that witness within, that observer within.
It can.
Yeah.
Anything can. You know, being locked up in solitary confinement can. So it's what we bring to it. Being in relationship with other people can cause us to become very expansive, saint-like, in fact, and it can also cause a person to become bitter and angry and resentful and closed. So it's what we bring to it. It's our willingness and our desire to free ourselves from suffering. I mean, that now, if we want to get into Buddhism, there it is. It's that impulse to free ourselves from suffering that will inspire us to learn how things work so that we can make choices that lead us to these more loving places.
Now, when you say free ourselves from suffering, there's a distinction that you make between suffering and pain. Can you say a little
Absolutely.
Bit about that?
Absolutely, yeah. Pain is just part of being alive. We live in bodies, and bodies are subject to pain. If we are with that experience, if we bring compassion and embrace that pain, then we have one experience. If we reject the pain, if we resist it, if we try to get away from it, if we see it as something wrong and we hate it, then that's when the suffering kicks in.
So it's actually our resistance to what is. It's our pushing away from what's happening to us that creates suffering. Yeah, that can seem really counterintuitive sometimes. I personally grew up. My listeners have heard this before. My dad was an alcoholic. He was a drunk. We say now he's an alcoholic, but you know, but he was
didn't,
drunk.
He yeah. didn't actually achieve that more
yeah,
elevated
yeah.
status.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so the idea of sort of embracing his abuse, you know. See, like I hear you say this, and I'm just using me as an example, but I'm sure listeners have these experiences where, you know, they've been in these relationships that feel abusive, that feel, what are you saying? You know, am I supposed
to? Well, yeah, well, may I?
Yeah,
because that's a really important point that you're bringing. From my perspective, my encouragement to you would be to forget about your father. That would be job one. Take him out of the equation. There was a little boy who was caught in awful, awful, awful circumstances. And there was nobody there to help him understand what was going on, to realize that it wasn't his fault, to protect him, to give him tools and that sort of thing. You, as at whatever point, you know, I know you've looked at this, but let's pretend you haven't.
No, you keep going. Use me as an example.
Okay. You, when you realize, oh my gosh, that was really awful. What happened to him was really awful. Then at that point, you find the desire to save him from that suffering. You don't want him to suffer for another moment, thinking that it was his fault or that he could have been different or any of that. And your focus is on it, basically, you know that bumper sticker, it's never too late to have a happy childhood?
Mm-hmm.
So your focus becomes helping him have the childhood he never had. And it takes you to that place of unconditional love and acceptance for him. Now, when that relationship is all healed, when he's a happy little guy and he's a happy teenager and he's a happy young man and you're through all of that, that would be a good time to turn your attention to your father.
Mm.
And probably at that point, of course, what compassion would help you realize is, wow, I bet he was an abused little boy.
I just parenthetically here, we're about to take a break, but so your teachings on this subject, your books, I've never met you, you know, but your books on this subject are actually the path I found out. Yeah, that, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon, but and what I actually learned wasn't that. He was abused as a little boy, but the better lesson I found was the things that I was so hungry for from him were the things that he had never had in his life. And when I cultivated them myself, I could then turn around and give them back to him. And when I was telling my dad how proud I was of him, and when I was telling my dad how much I loved him, that hard place inside him that needed to criticize me melted, and I got, he just needed a better dad, you know, and I could be that dad, and he couldn't.
Exactly. Exactly. If you captured it perfectly. That's exactly it. And what a strange place to be in,
right,
where you are now going to become the dad your father never had.
Right.
Yeah. It doesn't matter who gets there, as long as somebody gets there. You can be there for all of us.
I learned that all from you. We're gonna take a short break. We're listening. I'm talking to Sherry Huber. You're listening to Sex, Love, and Intimacy, and we'll be back in just a moment. And do come back, because we've got an exercise for you.
Listen to On the Minds of Men, Uncensored Sex Talk with Dr. Lori, a weekly audio program bringing the best in sex therapy to your life on personallifemedia.com.
We're back. You're listening to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I'm your host, Chip August. We've been having a great conversation here with Sherry Huber. We've been talking about love and self-awareness and loving yourself and compassion. Sherry doesn't like that word love, but I do, so I keep using it. I apologize.
Well,
I like the word a lot. So.
I like the way you use it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I do too, actually.
Yeah,
yeah. Too.
And that's my only point, that I wish there could be like love A and love B.
I completely agree with you.
I don't
really want to have a conversation about loving the 49ers. I don't really want to have a conversation about, you know, and I get the language. We are impoverished. I listened to our president describe himself as a compassionate conservative and got lost in the, please don't use that word compassion, because it doesn't, you're not using it the way I use it. So, but anyway, there we are. I notice in your books, a lot of where you go is meditation. A lot of, you know, you cogently and clearly kind of refine it down and then say, here's the path out, meditation. Do you see that sort of as the path out of all this stuff?
Yeah, yeah. And again, if people don't like the word meditation, they can talk about it as awareness or paying attention or learning to see, or, you know, however they want to think about it. But what we've got to do, earlier you mentioned the witness consciousness, mm-hmm. We have to be able to get out of this little, ball that we carry around on the top of our shoulders. We have to be able to get a distance from that in order to be able to find anything that we're looking for. As long as we're just trapped in that endless conversation inside the head, we're just doomed. And meditation, stepping back, paying attention, bringing expanded awareness, that's the way we can see beyond that little tiny world of suffering.
Okay, so how does that work? How does it? I have my own thoughts about how this works, and I've studied with a lot of people. But how does that work? Do you just sit, and this just magically happens?
Well, yes, actually, actually it does. But you know, it takes people so long to realize that it's almost useless to tell them that in the beginning. But what I encourage people toward at this point, you know, there's so much out there. And certainly when I started out, you know, you get up in the morning, you sit for an hour, and then you do whatever you do during the day, and you sit in meditation for an hour at night. And it's like nobody in their right mind is going to do that. You're just not. So I encourage people to find a place that they like where they're comfortable. It is helpful to sit upright.
Mm-hmm.
It just is. And that's another Adolf Hitler-esque discussion. You know, we could go into all of this stuff, or people could just take my word for it.
Right.
That sitting up straight, having your spine straight, is incredibly helpful.
Right. I've done this. I've done this for 30 years. Just do this this way and see.
Yeah. Just this one little thing
right.
is all to me.
Right.
And so then you simply sit and let your eyes go soft and sort of unfocused, and then you just notice. And that's the key to the entire thing. That is the fast track to freedom. You simply notice. You're not trying to clear your mind. You're not trying to see something. You're not trying to figure something out. You're just sitting there noticing everything that happens. I encourage people to start out doing that for 5 minutes once a day. You know, mornings are good because we're a little fresher and a little less beaten down by that in the head. Just do that. When that is really comfortable and you enjoy it and you realize, wow, I'm seeing a lot of really interesting stuff here, try not to reach any conclusions, and do it for 7 minutes a day. And just keep doing that until you get up to 20 or 30 minutes. And at that point, a person is wanting to do it more. So, you know, you're realizing you can practice it when you're sitting in the car waiting for a light, or when you're in an office waiting for somebody, or just whatever. You can do walking meditation where you just walk along and you're really present inside your body. You're aware of what you're seeing and hearing and smelling and tasting and the sunshine and the sound of the birds and the, you know, that sort of thing. And you're practicing being more in your body, more here, and just noticing what's going on beyond that conversation in the head that is usually so compelling for people.
So really, this is, if I'm hearing you correctly, what you're really saying is, I'm just going to stop for a moment, or for 5 minutes, or for 8 minutes, or 30 minutes, but I'm going to stop for a period of time, and I'm just going to be aware of what my body feels like, what my sensations are, what my feelings are, what my thoughts are, and to just be present with it,
yes.
And to not be solving or cogitating or fixing, but to just be present with what's happening.
Precisely.
Yeah.
That's it. And doing that, it really is magic. If people would do that, they would learn how much they love it. It's like a little mini vacation.
Mm.
It's very restful. It's relaxing. And, of course, what it does is open a curiosity about, well, what actually is going on
right,
here?
Right.
And that's when then we start, you know, looking into various things that are available to help us expand our awareness. You know, you mentioned there's nothing wrong with you. I truly, even though I wrote it, I think that it's a great place for people to start looking at the way things work.
Yeah.
That has been hidden because of that conversation in the head. So then it's just when you're practicing your awareness, you can begin to hear the voices that are saying really kind of mean, cruel, hateful things.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can watch how your attention is pulled away into, yeah, and then, you know, you're off and running.
Well, I completely agree. I think I wish everybody on the planet would just get a copy of There's Nothing Wrong With You. It's a great place to start. If people wanted to get your book, or they want to know more about you, or they want to learn more about your version of Zen or any of that, how would people get in touch with you? How can they learn more?
Okay, thank you for that.
Good segue, huh?
Yeah, that was very. You've done this before, haven't
you? I have, a few times, yeah.
Once or twice. Livingcompassion.org is our website. And so livingcompassion.org. And they can find out there all about the workshops and retreats and our work in Africa and, you know, all of the stuff that we're up to. And they can go into any bookstore and ask for something by me, and their local bookstore would certainly order it for them if they don't have it on the shelf. So, yeah, I'm not hard to find.
My experience is, in a way, every one of your books teaches the same thing, and also, in a way, every one of your books has its own particular slant and its own particular gem-like quality.
Well, it's just like life, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's always the same thing. We're always kind of looking at the same thing. You know, how can I be happier? How can I be a nicer person? How can I get more out of life? In relationship, at work, with money, you know,
yeah,
with
exactly.
My kids.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, listeners, if you didn't write down that address, don't worry about it. All you need to do is go to our site, personallifemedia.com. That's all one word, personallifemedia.com, where you'll find that next to Sherry Huber's name, we've got links. We've got a link to Living Compassion, and we've also got a link to sherryhuber.com. And so while you're there, you might want to actually read the transcript of this conversation, because we have text and transcripts of all of the Personal Life Media shows, as I say, at personallifemedia.com. If you would like to leave me some feedback, if you want to let me know how I'm doing or suggest guests for the show, I can be reached at chip@personallifemedia.com. And I do read all the mail that I get, and actually several of our guests have come as recommendations from our listeners. So I do like to hear feedback. Please feel free to give it to me. If you're a person who would rather give that feedback by voicemail, you can leave voicemail for Chip August by calling 206-350-5333. Please leave your name. Please leave my show name, Sex, Love, and Intimacy. And please leave your question or your comment, and a phone number or an email where we can reach you. And just know that when you leave a message, that is also indicating your agreement for us to use your message on air if it fits for us. So just know when we get messages, we sometimes use them on air for promotion and things. We are almost out of time, and I always like to have my guests end the program with something that people can do at home that comes out of the conversation we just had that might make their life more loving or might help them find more compassion. In your case, maybe it's an awareness exercise. And we talked about this a little before, and you said you thought you might have something.
Well, yes, and this is in addition, of course, to their 5 minutes of just noticing. One of the fun exercise, I think, is to think of three people in your life that you like, enjoy, admire, love, however you want to think about that, and just jot down the reason for that. So jot down, you know, three descriptions of each one, the quality that I like about this person. You know, this person has these qualities, and that person I really admire because of da 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 da, and write those out. And now, even though you know the end of the exercise, awareness will make it beneficial. And then remind yourself that that's a projection, that you are projecting your own qualities onto this other person, and so then change and write in I am.
Oh.
And see what it's like for you to own the quality that you projected out onto someone else, because it's the way it works. They are your qualities.
Got it. So we only see in others what's true of ourselves.
That's it.
Well, Sherry Huber, I just want to thank you so much for making this time available. I could talk to you all day. I like how you think, and I think you've been a great guest. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me, and if it ever works out that way, I'd love to do it again.
I think that we'll make that happen.
All right.
We'll definitely make that happen. And listeners, thank you for listening. I really appreciate your support. This brings us to the end of another show. You've been listening to Sex, Love, and Intimacy, and I hope you'll join us again.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.